Following the martyrdom of Joseph and Hiram Smith in the Carthage jail, Samuel Smith died within a month. Was he poisoned? We'll talk about that in our next episode with historian Steve Shields. We'll also talk about some other conspiracy theories. Was William Smith targeted? What about James Strang? We'll talk more about these early conspiracy theories. Check out our conversation. Hey, I also want to remind you we're under 12 days of Christmas left, so please check out our Amazon page. I've got it here on YouTube, but if you're listening on audio, just go to Amazon.com and search for Gospel Tangents. You can see we've got many transcripts for sale, such as our Dory Olds and many others. So check those out. Send them to your friends. Give them to yourself. We'd really appreciate that support, and this is our way to wish you all a Merry Christmas. Now back to our conversation. Let's talk about William a little bit. Because he was back east, and I think there was some concern because Joseph and Hiram were killed. Sam died soon thereafter.
Sam died not long after.
And so they were concerned for William's life and said, don't come back to Nauvoo.
That's right. Yeah,
and so he stayed back east for a time, and then I guess when the coast was clear.
It wasn't too long because by September he's in Nauvoo.
Okay. Because Joseph was killed in June.
The end of June.
And so by September.
It's only a month, and he was back in Nauvoo practically. So
he came back. Now, by the way, and I don't know if you're an expert on this, I've heard some people say that Samuel might have been poisoned. Have you ever heard that?
There is that theory that is floating around. Yeah, I've heard that theory.
What are your thoughts on that?
Conspiracy theorists, okay, fine. Was he poisoned deliberately? Who knows? There's no way to know. The typical story had been that he, was it pneumonia or cholera? I can't remember what, but in those days, in the Midwest, in the summer months, you had malaria, you had typhus, you had cholera. I mean, that stuff was rampant. Their food sanitation was different from what we would have today. It could have been any number of things, I think. There's no way to ever know for sure. Now, even if we were to exhume his remains, there's not enough left to do any of that kind of study, probably. Was he poisoned deliberately by somebody? Well, it could be, but why? Maybe I have a different view of Brigham Young and his colleagues than some. I'm not willing to just write Brigham Young off and call him an evil, usurper. I'm not sure I could ever go along with that. His argument was rational. His leadership skills certainly were top notch. Now, he was dictatorial, yes, but you had to have some administrative and leadership skills to pull off what he pulled off. Mm-hmm. And I don't buy the idea that, well, people were just afraid of him, and so they just went along with him. I don't buy that.
Okay.
Were there people afraid of Brigham Young? Yeah, probably so, but probably for good reason. I don't think we talk about the resurrection of the Danites in Utah and how Brigham sent death squads out. Well, there might have been one or two people that he didn't want to have around, but it wasn't a rampant, extermination of all of his opposition. It just wasn't. So.
Because the conspiracy theory I heard was Brigham Young somehow poisoned Samuel.
Exactly. Samuel was never in the running.
Okay.
He was never in the running. It was Joseph Smith III. So if anybody's going to be poisoned, it would be Emma and Joseph III.
That would be the more logical.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
Emma and Brigham did not like each other at all. Brigham wanted all the papers. Emma said, over my dead body. But she never was killed. And Brigham never excommunicated her.
Right.
So that would be where you would go.
Okay.
I think if you're wanting to get rid of potential contenders,
that would be more logical. Okay.
But maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I've read all the books on Brigham Young. I've read Arrington's book.
Yeah.
Or was it Bitt? Who wrote the Brigham Young book? Was it Arrington or Bitten? I can't remember. 30-some years ago.
John Turner's the latest one. So.
Well, the book that was either Arrington or Bitten, I can't, oh my goodness.
We'll look it up.
Look it up. Arrington and Bitten both were too honest as historians to gloss over stuff that might have been, you know, might feed into that sort of a thing. Brigham Young was ruthless, yes, but he had this vision for what the community could become, and look at it now. You know, Brigham Young's vision of turning Utah into a place that would be, you know, a good place for the saints to live, where they could have good farms. Nobody else pulled it off. Nobody else pulled it off. Up until probably the turn of the 20th century, the RLDS and the Utah Church were almost the same number of members. After Brigham Young's death, I think the polygamy trials helped. When I say trials, I mean that 20, 30 years of difficulty with the U.S. government. I think that helped just solidify what Brigham had, and the RLDS in the Midwest didn't have that sort of a, you know, thing to bring them together, and Salt Lake membership just started rising, and Community of Christ membership just went up a little bit.
All right, so it was Leonard Arrington.
Yeah, Leonard Arrington wrote Brigham Young, American Moses. That's okay. The book.
All right.
Others have written since. I'm sure they've all done a great job, but if you haven't read Leonard Arrington's book, you need to read it. this conspiracy stuff that went on, nobody knows. Conspiracy theories often never get proved.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would come out somewhere in some of those biographies. It would have to.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's step back to William Smith, because
okay.
I know... So he came to Nauvoo September of 1844.
By the end of August, early September, he was back in Nauvoo, I'm pretty sure.
And then Brigham ordained him as patriarch.
And he was called as patriarch, and I presume they ordained him.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm not sure that all that ritual stuff had really been solidified at that early time. I
mm-hmm.
don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Today, of course, we would always do that. Did they need to? He was already an apostle. Maybe he just needed to be designated that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Somebody else knows that history better than me.
So, but then he and Brigham got in a fight.
Well, they just, I don't know that they fought. They just, you know, Brigham was a very powerful personality. He was strong. And, you know, when he said, we need to do this, generally, most people just agreed with him, not because they were going along and being yes people, because he was usually right. You know, he was thoughtful.
Well, and William was pretty erratic, too.
William had always been erratic. but I'm sympathetic. He had older brothers who just, there was no way he could not be erratic, because he was always in the shadow of Hiram and Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And Hiram and Joseph were the favored sons. And, you know, William just wanted to be acknowledged as his own person, I think.
And it seems like I recall a story where Joseph and William got in a little bit of an argument in a meeting. And Joseph told him to sit down. And he's like, you make me sit down. And almost came to
anybody close. Have a younger brother? Yeah. It's classic family dynamic, you know. And all William wanted to do was to be acknowledged as his own person and to really be acknowledged as an apostle in his own right. Even though he was an apostle and member of the 12, he was always second chair,
mm-hmm.
you know. William did not have a strong personality. And we look at the history in the 10 or so years after Joseph Smith's death. William was against polygamy, then he subscribed to polygamy, then he was against polygamy. And, you know, it's like he's just a poor kid trying to find his way
mm-hmm.
and trying to find what he could do to get people to like him as much as they loved his brother.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I know he joined with James Strang.
I don't want to be derogatory because I'm supposed to be objective here, but it's kind of like a jack in the box, in and out and in and out and in and out. Early in the fall of 1844, George Adams proposes a church organization with William Smith as patriarch some town in Iowa was where Adams was. And then a couple of months later, it's the other way around. William Smith as president of the church and George Adams as a counselor. And then within a few months after that, both of them are with Strang.
Okay.
And
I didn't realize there was a church before Strang. That's interesting.
Two
churches.
Well, of William Smith and George J. Adams.
Right.
And they just kind of reversed roles. Nothing ever came of those. An announcement was made and whatever, but they just didn't. Strang really began to roll in early 1845, and William Smith and George J. Adams become leaders in Strang's organization. William is an apostle. Adams eventually became a counselor to Strang. Adams stayed for a long time. He stuck it out for 10 years or so with Strang. Within weeks of affiliating, William Smith was disaffiliated. And that was before Strang ever got involved, ever publicly announced polygamy. I'm not sure when he got involved in it. Somebody knows those dates. I just can't remember them. William Smith was there long enough to write this hymn that was published in Strang's paper at Voree, which is near Burlington, Wisconsin, or actually is now part of the city limits. But it was an ode to Voree. And it has something like 15 verses. And I forget the tune that it was set to.
15 verses?
Yeah, it's quite a long poem. and that's about the biggest imprint William Smith made on the Strang following. George J. Adams later leaves Strang right about the time Strang is assassinated and ends up back in Maine starting his own church. Lost my train of thought.
Back to William.
William then leaves Strang and tries several more church organizations.
Yeah, I know he ended up in the reorganization, but I think he tried to start his own after, or was that?
No, not after. Once he was received in membership after Joseph Smith III became president, I suspect Joseph III told him to just sit down and shut up. And we never hear of William Smith after that. He lives the rest of his life as an elder in the reorganization, and I think the next mention of him is his obituary. There very little of anything's going on. So
I know he campaigned to be the patriarch and Joseph.
He campaigned to be that. Joseph III didn't want him as patriarch, didn't want him as an apostle. He could only be an elder.
So was there anything between Strangite and RLDS for William? Or no?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's another five attempted church organizations. Okay. A couple of them with Martin Harris at Kirtland. I can't list them all off the top of my head. I've got almost 500 expressions cataloged in the fifth edition. My memory's pretty good. Not that good. And they're all Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, I was noticing that. There were a lot with that name.
Well, that was the name of the church in 1844. Why would you not use that name?
If you're the official church.
William Bickerton's when he first organized, they were the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And some of their early publications in the early 1860s carry that name.
Yeah, now the Bickersonites are the third largest Mormon
They're the group. Third largest. Yeah, they're the third largest in total membership.
So just to recap, so LDS Church.
The LDS Church, of course, is one. Our LDS, or Community of Christ, is two. Church of Jesus Christ at Monongahela, Pennsylvania, is three. Probably Church of Christ on the Temple Lot.
Okay.
Wait, that's four. Who am I missing?
The Fundamentalists, are they pretty big?
Not them. Alpheus Cutler's is the smallest of the big six. They've got about maybe 12 living members.
That's right.
12 or 14, something like that. Who did I miss in my list? I'm the one who came up with the list. Why can't I remember the list? Let's see.
Strang.
Oh, Strang. Yeah, Strang, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Because they're still around, and there's about 300.
And there are a few different iterations.
There's a few different expressions. There's the main body, which has the most population, is the church that calls itself officially the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Strangite. And that's their official incorporated name.
Oh, they put the Strangite in parentheses.
They put the Strangite in parentheses, and that's on the corporate documents.
Okay.
There are probably a couple of other streams of authority that date back to the original Strangite. There I used it again.
Well, it's in their name.
But there was a larger group that said when there was a second group when the larger group incorporated in the 60s with the name Strangite appended. This other folks, and they'd all been in fellowship, said, no, that's wrong. The church should not incorporate because that then subjects them to the laws of government first, the laws of God second. So this other smaller affiliation said, we continue the original. And then there's a couple of lines of authority that diverge. And the whole Strang movement from the time he died, because he did not designate a successor, and there was no angel visitation coming to anoint any successor, you had families that had priesthood originally, and they continued to ordain and baptize family members, but there was not a centralized denominational structure, so to speak. But all told, there's about 300 today. So they're
300
Strang followers.
Okay.
Followers. One organized denominational structure at Burlington, Wisconsin, and then other fellowship groups. And all sides have tried to work hard to be in fellowship with each other and to not nitpick about who's right and who's wrong. And by and large, they've done a pretty good job of that, but the recognizing each other's priesthood authority as legitimate is still kind of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, only will be resolved as certain personalities die out, probably.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Steve Shields. We're going to take a break from Steve for just a moment because I want to share a few Christmas stories. So in our next interview, we've got Dr. Thomas Wayman from BYU. Is it true that early or ancient people in the days of Christ celebrated birthdays?
I think the modern reader has placed a lot of emphasis. I know my birthday. You know yours. We have September 11th. We all know what that means. We have D-Day, June 6th. We know these things. They don't care. They don't have documents where they celebrate their birthday. And we have documents from Egypt where people say, I think I'm 12 years old. I think I'm 28. And they just don't know. And I could see Jesus being one of them saying to Luke, or you know, he didn't say to Luke, but he said to his disciples, I think I'm about 30 years old.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.